past 12 here. Maurice Misiolowski is in Melbourne, as usual. How are you doing, Maurice?
Yeah, very, very good. And hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. You always start off with a weather report, so you can do more of it today. And it just so happens that we're probably in for a clouting weather-wise later on this week. And the one thing that always happens, probably not just here, is people say, they didn't tell us in advance enough, we didn't get enough warning, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I thought we could tie in our usual chit-chat about AI and see what you know about the future of weather prediction.
Well, that's pretty much everything we have to say, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, done. See you in the cafe.
Yeah, pretty much.
in Australia, actually, in fairness, because you've had some serious weather anomalies these past couple of years.
Yeah, we have, but when you look back, I mean, yes, living through them, they seem like anomalies, and certainly we've had some variations we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
But the weather is exactly that. It's just unpredictable, even though we're going to talk about how we can make it more predictable. At the moment in Australia, we have a ski season which lasts about 2.5 minutes here. It's a joke to anyone else in the world. But it starts somewhere around early June, mm-hmm. What we call Queen's Birthday is usually when it starts. And they announced last week that it was over, done for the year.
Well, there you go.
And that was in August. I mean, I know we're in September, but they announced it in August. So normally we go through till September, sometimes October. So our ski slopes have certainly, you know, spent, what, 6, 7, 8 weeks with less snow on them. Mm. And we're seeing more and more of that. Melbourne's not really a good place, although I think it is, but everybody laughs at our weather because if you don't like it, wait a half an hour and it'll change.
Yeah.
But we have been really changeable lately.
Have you been changing more? That's the thing. Yeah. Oh,
look, last night here we had 120 kilometre per hour wind gusts, right. And we had that the night before as well. It's really not unheard of, but unusual. They really were blowing a gale, and I'm looking out the window now, and it's a beautiful blue sky afternoon.
See, all we've been hearing about, obviously a little bit later than you, I have a chat with Jared, and he's very switched into bushfires and all this kind of stuff over the years. When did you notice that it really kind of radically changed in Aussie?
I think it was about 15, 20 years ago, right. When we had that massive bushfire that really took out a lot of Mallacoota, which is at the very, very bottom end in on the coast of Victoria. They were terrible bushfires.
Yeah.
I think they burnt, and I am sure I'm wrong in saying this, but I think it was 4 to 6 weeks or something, 4 to 6 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
They just kept burning and burning and burning. And we go through really bad bouts of that. We have really bad bushfires, and then we of course go into bad droughts, but Australia I think is pretty much known for that as well.
Well, what do you know about the technology? It must have been forced to change.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone away from my arthritic bones and putting a finger in the air, yeah. Which is pretty much how we used to do it. My mother swore by both of those, and she was normally righter than she was wronger. But never mind, we've become far more sophisticated than that. Well, we think we have. We've talked a lot, and so has everybody else, about artificial intelligence and quantum computing,
yeah.
And all those bits and pieces. But they do play a really big part in our weather forecasting. We now use satellites, and that's a big difference. I mean, not now as in only this week, but in the last decade we're using satellites, because before then we looked up, not down, if that makes sense.
That recently.
So we had nothing.
Well,
10 or 15 years since the weather department's routinely used satellites and a whole lot of other stuff to make weather predictions with. They were up there for much, much longer than that. But certainly in Australia, it's the last 10, 15 years or so they've started to use them routinely, you know, day in, day out, wouldn't think to be without them. But that's been a big difference too, because we can now look overhead. We can get that really big, it's not a helicopter view, it's a spaceship view of what's happening on the planet, mm-hmm. And send that information back. So that's made a huge difference too. And we are now using drones, which is kind of the middle ground purpose. We're using drones as well as all the weather stations we have. So we've really got three tiers now of information, plus a whole lot of other things that are constantly scouring the hemisphere.
I wonder if it was such that, say, some time ago, you could see a cloud formation and they would forecast and predict that it will go from A to C in the next X hours. But now it seems more like we're talking about what's disrupting the weather patterns, causing other ones.
It is, but also we need to put this in context, I think, for me anyway, and that is that, like everything else, we want everything minute by minute,
yeah,
instant by instant, kick by kick, and that wasn't what we wanted 15, 20, 30 years ago. We were kind of okay by knowing that this week it was and today it might be. We now literally, and I'm as guilty as anybody else, you know, pull out the app and I want it to tell me in the next 30 seconds when I'm walking out the door, do I need a jumper or not?
So it's Apple.
So we are expecting a whole lot more than we ever have before, and we also want it to be hyper-local, and that's almost impossible today. Might not be in 15, 20 years, but today it's almost impossible, although I know many apps are pushing out with a local suburb attached to it and giving us some indication. But our expectations, Phil, is what I was getting at. We have far higher expectations of what we want the weather to tell us about itself before it comes through.
Get the impression it's not so much tomorrow's going to be sunny that people say, you didn't tell me, it's the extremes, it's the typhoons and the like.
Well, the typhoons, I mean, I think we're seeing more of them. It's not an area that I, you know a lot about generally, but certainly a lot of people would be saying that that was because of climate issues, and I wouldn't discount that for a moment. So we are seeing that we are going through far more wild cycles than we have ever before. Certainly we know that, you know, 1 degree of change in the snow or the ice will make a huge difference across the planet. We talk a lot about the butterfly effect too, that one small change in one small discrete space really ricochets around the globe quite quickly. So it appears that we certainly are finding our weather to be more volatile than ever. But I'm also still hedging a bit of a bet by saying that we know more about than ever before. Our records are better than ever before. We only have really scant information going back through millenniums, and most of that is through anthropology and through the ability to be able to look at bones and rocks and things and make those kinds of insights. We don't have infinite information. We've only really got the last 100 years or so to base it on.
Yeah, it's quite interesting locally. So obviously there's something swinging around in our neck of the woods, and quite likely the weather's going to get pretty nasty later in the week. We shall see, because, you know, usually by now we in Hong Kong have been clobbered quite badly by typhoons and all sorts of things happen. Well, I mean, I think one or two ago it was kind of seen off by a warm front, which doesn't usually happen. I mean, we've got off quite lightly this year, touching some wood here.
Yeah, it's definitely strange. But the weather is something I think that will forever be something that we'll be talking about. It's just part of humanity.
You sent me a very cool-looking website here. Tell me what that's about.
It was a website that really talks about the future of weather, and it goes through some interesting technologies. It's a bit pictorial. It talks about the technology and things that we might be using and are using today and into the future. It talks about AI-powered models, and that's really where I think we're going to get better and better at weather forecasting.
What will they do? What will they bring to the party, do you think?
It's not so much about putting your finger out, you know, into the wind and seeing which way it blows. It is about putting a virtual finger out, so saying that over the next 3, 4, 5 months, 2 weeks, whatever time period we choose, tell us, being the virtual stuff, what the weather's likely to be, and what it will do is go away and find similar patterns in the past of weather, and it will be able to manipulate those and figure out that given the winds are coming from this direction, that's what's happening, and this is the weather over the next 4 weeks, these are the likely scenarios based on everything we know in our databanks of what's going to happen, and it can be modelled really quickly, you know, in a millisecond, literally. We can throw in some weather, we can throw in some wind, we can throw in some rain, and we can get instant predictions and forecasts about what those minuscule changes will make. That will be a huge game changer when we can do that. And we're not far away from it.
So it is sticking its finger in the air, but a squillion times a second.
Virtual.
Yeah.
Virtual. It's going back. I mean, there literally is no difference to any farmer I've ever spoken to, anyone on the land. They just know intuitively the last 100 years. I mean, they haven't been around that long, but the last 100 years of weather. They can tell you that if it's a bit blowy today, that something's going to happen, because they know intuitively. What we're talking about with artificial intelligence and quantum computing is the ability to do that virtually, is to have all the information, all the data that's been stored over the centuries, millenniums, at their fingertips, and they can model it and trial it and throw things in and out and get something they hope is fairly accurate.
So the web page he sent me, it looks like it's from a company, a technology company, right?
Yeah, it is.
Right, so they say Weather 2030, transforming the future forecasting, and they begin with something wham, bam. It says 2019, Hurricane Michael, less than 24 hours till it escalate from Category 1 to Category 4, catching forecasters and those in its path dangerously off guard. So that's their whole shtick. We don't want you to be caught off guard anymore, and that's where we started.
Yeah, And it is, and it's a noble cause. I'm not quite sure that we can or will be able to get quite there. We talk about Mother Nature really being a fickle beast, that it will do what it wants to do, and it seems to, despite all the abilities so far, to be able to predict with certainty that the likelihood is that the best we'll get to in the foreseeable future is 70-80% of accuracy, and I think that's pretty good for now.
I mean, it's quite interesting that this is a necessity. This is a need thing because, you know, back to Australia, some incredible extremes of weather, very dangerous, life-threateningly dangerous. So that's where you need this technology,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is absolutely where we need it. The difficulty we have is that we kind of want to forecast that long into the distance. You know, we'd like, of course, months, if years, to be able to say that we need to get ready for this. And that is a long way off for what we have the technology to be. We often will get, you know, the next 3 months, 6 months, 12 months are likely to be El Nino or whatever. But even that's been wrong in the last year. We were predicted to have droughts and they didn't come. We were predicted to have a heat wave over summer, that didn't come.
It's because it's changing its mind last minute. Maybe that's what's catching people out.
It's just the weather. I mean, it literally is just the weather. It's doing its own thing and we're not yet clever enough to be able to understand what that is in totality.
Yeah. Well, we didn't need to have this conversation because you could have said, hi, Phil, hi, Morris, AI. Thank you. Let's move on to the next one. Let's do that right now because Morris has written a really cool piece on his blog, morrisfuturist.com, Language Evolution from Shakespeare to Sigma. And he gets into Gen Z parlance. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah. You may laugh, but everybody understands when you read this stuff on text.
Yeah, they do. So this is a conversation I have often, and that is that the language that we use really represents our future view of the world. That what we're doing is we're using the vernacular, we're using the grammar, we're using the way that we structure sentences to really tell the world about what's important to us. Shakespeare was a great example of that. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare was enacted to be the bard of English. It's what everyone holds up as high English. And nobody, of course, speaks that way now and haven't for a long time. But Shakespeare was really a bastardization in its day. It was the vernacular.
Street English, really, isn't it?
Well, even worse, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's exactly what it was. And it was terrible. I mean, you know, the folks who went to the theatre would never be seen dead as seeing or being involved in any of this. And it doesn't make it bad or worse. It just makes it a piece of historical interest, but for me, more interestingly, a piece of future interest. So I've had a look in the last couple of weeks. It's at the language evolution around the world, and the Gen Zs particularly, and that's pretty much because sometimes I get stuff that I just don't understand. Yeah. I know it's got English characters in it, but that's about the end, the subtitle of everything I get. But prefacing that, Phil, just for a sec, at the moment we have 7,000 languages somewhat alive in our world, 7,000 of them. Mm-hmm. Out of 7,000 of them, there are only 23 languages that 40% of the world speak. So the vast majority of our 7,000 languages are actually disappearing.
Is body language one of them?
Well, it's the English, the French, the Chinese, the Spanish are all rising. Arabic is rising. So when you look at vast populations, you find that, of course, the bigger the number of people that speak it, the more likely it is to retain itself. And that, of course, is also part of the reason for that is that in the past, we have lived very insular lives. And if you go back only 50 years ago, maybe even more recently, you'll find that every local region had its own dialect, perhaps some of its own words, its own language, its own way to express things. And that never really translated, never really had to go very far. Nowadays, we use, unfortunately, and I think it is unfortunate, we use a lot of Americanisms because we've had popular culture come from America. So English has become really dominant. China, of course, is a vast language spoken around the world. Spanish is rising too. So that's one of the big reasons that we're really contracting the number of languages we have, because more people are speaking fewer languages because they're exposed to them and it is common for them. But can I give you a couple of words before we knock off?
We've got time.
Just to see if they make sense. So these are Gen Zs, depending on which side of the fence you're sitting on, the Z or the Z. One of them, if I said I was simping over you, Phil, what might I be saying?
Fawning, paying too much attention.
Yes, being overly attentive or submissive. Now, the one that brought all this about was a conversation I had, I think, 3-4 weeks ago, maybe longer, where I was being told about Sigma energy. Mm-hmm. And I was told, in not a particularly unpleasant way, that perhaps what I was putting off was a whole lot of Sigma energy into the room.
Maverick Morris.
Yes. Now, I mean, it refers to an independent lone wolf personality.
Yeah.
And it's an everyday one. Now, Stan, this is something you would have a great number of, Phil, something that you would absolutely have a great number of. If you have a Stan, it's a blend of stalker and fans.
Stan, that's
somebody
awesome.
Somebody who's an extremely enthusiastic and devoted fan of someone or something.
See, this is it. These words make sense. I think that...
Well, they do when you break them apart.
You know, you were just saying to me that take the countries, well, certainly where I come from, dialects and different languages all over the place. I think what happens is you take, in English, there'll be a word that is the word we know, and bearing in mind the accents of people, the way their mouths form when they speak, it gets easier and easier to say a certain word in your way because you've just become lazier and lazier with it.
It does, and it becomes accepted, you know, accepted in your community, either in your family or broader out in your community, and it becomes the way that we speak. And you're right. I mean, you can literally tell as you go around Australia, there's a one, and I can't give you it because I don't quite remember it, but as you go around Australia, there's a different way of ordering a beer, not only in state from state, but from region to region, because they're each called something different, and even though the cup, the glass that you drink it in is the same size, each one of those is referred to differently as well. And I was once taken on this wonderful, I mean, conversational tour right around Australia of how you would order a beer in these different regions. It was really amusing.
Got to knock it off, Morris, but very quickly, a few seconds worth, why were people who were born loosely in the 1990s, why did they appeal to you in writing this article?
Because I think they're becoming a part of our dominant culture. Ah. The reality is that baby boomers are slowly disappearing out of the workforce, disappearing out of all sorts of things. And the Gen Zs are the ones who are going to come in and take that space. They're the ones that are going to make the boardrooms. They're the ones that are going to be our politicians. Interesting to see how they see the world, how they frame the world, how they talk about the world, because their decisions are kind of the ones that I need to figure out over the next 10 or 15 years.
Right. To be continued, because we want to talk about how social media and WhatsApps and texting and everything has formed an actual legit language. But we've got to stop now. If you want to read more about this, morrisfuturist.com and go to the blog bit. Thanks, Morris. Brilliant as always.
Pleasure.
See you soon. Let's do some weather.